What's the deal with this?
Deal? What are you saying?
Deal.
Deal?
I don't see what the big deal is, you know? It's not that great.
Good deal. You won't regret it.
What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
All right, look, here's the deal.
What do you say we make this deal?
Co-working, as well as other flexible workspaces, are known for offering environments that are conducive to innovation, collaboration, and productivity. These types of workplaces were pioneers in implementing a human approach to design, a trend which is catching up among real estate developers, landlords, and companies. Today on the show, I am speaking with Itai Banayan, Vice President of Real Estate at Mindspace. Mindspace gives entrepreneurial-spirited members the freedom to thrive in a collaborative working environment dubbed a co-working space. This type of office encompasses gathering a myriad of startups, freelancers, and businesses of all sizes under one roof in a shared environment, which promotes creativity, the creation of community, and the sharing of ideas. I'm your host, Ryan Cox, Managing Partner at Founders Grove Capital. My experience includes raising and structuring equity capital investments for more than $205 million in multifamily assets. I'd like to announce the first Austin Commercial Real Estate Tech event on October 25th at the Capital Factory. I'm very excited to bring together some of the brightest CRE tech founders and commercial real estate focused venture capitalists to Austin. It is important as an investor to understand the technology that is shaping the future of commercial real estate. And with a thriving venture community, it is equally as important to nourish the small but growing list of CRE tech startups in Austin, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. Go to www.cretech.com/event/Austin to register. And welcome to The Real Estate Innovators, the podcast that explores innovation in commercial real estate with technology, design, and development. Celebrate the companies and innovators who are changing the business of commercial real estate and are inspiring the future of how we work, live, and play. I asked Itai about his background and what drew him to the co-working space.
I've always been in real estate finance. Just happened that after undergrad, I joined a boutique investment banking firm in Israel that advised on real estate transactions. So this is where I learned all of the modeling and everything that an analyst will do in a banking industry. I then continued to taking an MBA at Stern, NYU Stern in New York, in 2008. So we started the program 2 weeks after Lehman fell. It was like being in ER when somebody's getting a heart attack. So it was, on hindsight, it was fascinating to be in school in these days and understand everything that was going on in the industry. After school, I joined Citibank. I was with the real estate investment banking group in New York for a few years, and which was fascinating because it was right after the crisis and the capital markets were extremely active and M&A activity was very high. So I was fortunate to be involved in some really exciting large deals across different sectors in the real estate industry. And after Citibank, I joined a large global $20 billion portfolio real estate owner and manager that was one of our clients at Citi. And after a few transactions with him, they invited me to join the forces. And there I had the opportunity to really kind of like kick the tires and lead acquisition, dispositions of properties, financing, refinancing of properties, and manage large lease negotiations. So leases above 200,000 square feet were floating up to the management level because of the impact of these leases that these leases create. And over there, I kind of like started questioning the entire model because it felt to me that this is the wrong way to do business, that you're starting a 10, 15 years relationship with a very large client of yours in the absolute wrong way by kind of like negotiating and fighting and discussing everything that can go wrong in the next 10 to 15 years and nickeling and diming each other and fighting over cents per square foot and so on. And something about it felt weird that you're not focusing on your client's needs, but each one is kind of like fighting on his own needs, and that kind of like led to me starting to think that this should be a different way, a different approach. WeWork was just starting at the time, and about a year or so after this aha moment. We decided to move back to Israel, my wife and I with the kids, for romantic reasons of raising the kids in Israel. And I decided to join Mindspace. So the full disclaimer, I wasn't the founder of Mindspace. It was founded by Dan Zaka and Yotam Elroy. But I joined Mindspace relatively very early. The company had at the time only two operating locations and two more locations in the pipeline. And I joined as the first member to join the senior management and establish the real estate practice and the real estate team in the firm that is basically leading our global growth and helped grow the company from what it was back then to about 29 locations today and almost 1 million square foot and keep growing.
For landlords, flex and co-working space creates value for their portfolios, and office operators see the growth of these approaches as a way to gain more market share from corporate tenants. Landlords working with co-working operators that have a strong brand have significant benefits for building owners. I asked Itai about how he sees the value of the co-working business model.
We're not fighting kind of like on behalf of our clients against the landlords. We're actually solving the needs for both parties, and we see landlords as partners. But if you'll allow me, for the sake of the people in the audience that are not proficient in real estate, and like I want to take 2 minutes to kind of like give a background on kind of like how real estate was operating until now and what is the big change that is not only led by Mindspace, but is a general kind of like paradigm shift in the industry. So in general, if we look at lenders, at banks, when they lend money, their biggest focus is on lowest default rate and making sure that they're getting their money back. This is what they're focused on. This led historically lenders to love the real estate industry, because if, God forbid, you lend money to a building and something is wrong and you get the keys for this building, it's very easy to operate. You hire a property manager company, and it's very also easy. It's very easy to value the property because it's a real asset. So banks and lenders historically prefer the real estate sector over other sectors. And you can see that as an asset class, real estate enjoyed historically for decades now, almost the highest leverage as an industry with the lowest cost of capital. But that led to the wrong focus, because when properties were somewhat over leveraged with long-term debt, with very predictable debt service, for the next 5-10 years, the focus of the lenders and the landlord was on getting the longest term possible of a lease with the highest possible credit of a tenant. So the focus was on term and credit, and that didn't necessarily serve well the tenants. So by forcing tenants to sign long-term leases, in order for the landlords and the lenders to feel comfortable with the long-term fixed debt obligation that they took, they basically forced tenants to predict their occupancy needs for the next 5, 7, 10 years. Now, there is not a single company on the universe that creates a budget for 10 years. They have a budget for 5 years or 3 years. And nevertheless, they don't really know what will be their occupancy needs in such a long-term period, and especially if it's not kind of like the Cupertino headquarter, you know, if it's a satellite office somewhere else. But that was the industry, and there was nothing that they could have done about it. So they took almost always more space than they needed in order to be able to, you know, to kind of like serve their futuristic occupancy needs without even knowing what they will be. And also it forced them to engage with an industry that they are not necessarily need to be professional about. So they negotiated leases and they hired general contractors and project managers and architects and so on. And if you're a global company, like this is a real headache, because these industries operate very differently in different markets. So focusing on their own needs of the lenders and the landlords and ignoring the needs of the tenants basically created a lot of inefficiencies for the tenants. What we're solving is we're basically answering the needs of both parties. So we are providing our tenants flexibility and efficiency, and also we are solving the headache of around what makes an office space productive and innovative and inspiring, and an office space that can attract talent and so on. So we're solving a lot of needs for the tenants, and we're also solving a lot of needs for the landlords, because landlords are starting to realize that a prime located, well maintained building in a certain city might not be enough anymore. And in order to attract millennials and the new workforce and new talent, they might need to activate their buildings. And most landlords are asset centric companies, and they should be. And it's hard for them to answer the needs of the end user, of the actual people in their building. So what we're doing for landlords is we're providing them with their commercial terms that they want, and even better than what they want, with the new partnerships and new business models that are now evolving in the market. We're helping them squeeze more per square foot, more from their real estate than they even didn't know that they can squeeze more out of it. And while we're doing so, we're also solving the needs for our tenants and providing them a solution that is that tailored to their needs and occupancy needs and so on. And at the end of the day, the beauty about it is, because of the sharing economy aspect of this entire business model, the occupancy cost per employee, not per square foot, the occupancy cost per employee for these companies is either breaking even or lower than the alternative of signing a lease. So it's a real win-win-win kind of like model. And it's almost amazing that it took kind of like so long for this model to evolve.
There are currently over 14,000 co-working spaces in the world today. I asked Itai how Mindspace competes and differentiates itself with so many competitors the world over.
First, the industry is comprised of 99% of the competitors are usually small, local, regional players. And there are a few starting to evolve national, global leaders. If you look at the website of almost any firm, you'll see that they're all saying that they're different because they have a unique design and they have a unique community and so on. It's all really nice and cute. But I think what one should look at is the actual results. When we looked at this industry, we realized that it looks sexy and easy from the outside. It's actually a complex business with complex operations from the inside. And if you want to be one of the winners, if you want to be one of the few global companies that kind of like will be here for the next 100 years, you need to be very diligent about what you do. So the differentiators that I can name are several. But at the end of the day, after I named them, at the bottom line is the approach that we're taking, understanding that that if we will take a non-compromising approach about everything that we do, and in all of the verticals, because you need to be very good at sourcing real estate, at analyzing cities and markets and customer needs and different cultures and preferences of different cultures in different cities and so on, and then you need to understand how to build it efficiently and design it efficiently and make it very inspiring. This is all very easy. And then you need to operate it day in, day out with events and community events and tailor the needs of your customers and so on. When you do all of these things together, it's starting to be a complex operation. And we what we're trying to do is to be 1%, 5%, 10% better than anyone else in kind of like marginally better on each one of these aspects. And as a whole, it makes the entire experience kind of like complete and better. But the real focus is on this. It's we really aim to provide a high end experience. So a lot of the industry is starting to become commoditized, and we're not accepting this. Like, we will not let your experience at Mindspace to be commoditized. So we became enterprise experts, and more than 50% of our occupancy now is with global enterprises. and they trust us hosting their employees and their employees' experience. So we cannot allow ourselves to be mediocre about the service that we're giving. And and that's also a combination of a high-end experience, not only from what's happening inside, it's also what's happening outside of our space. So we are not compromising on locations. We're not compromising on the quality of the building. We choose very large landlords on purpose because we know that many times these landlords know how to manage their building and will fix anything that can happen in the building. And even if it's not our fault, we'll fix anything extremely fast and make sure that the experience is complete and aligned with our experience. We take an artistic design. We think that like you spend so much time in an office space that you need to enjoy this time. So we curate artists in every city. So every Mindspace location you walk into will have similar look and feel qualities, but will be completely different because different artists and different styling happened in the space. And it's a lot of fun to see how spaces are changed and like different from one another. And they're very playful and smart and innovative and inspiring. We won numerous global design awards, by the way, including the property design awards. It feels like the market feels the same. We have a special design team in the headquarters that is doing all of this work. We put a lot of emphasis on the community and lifestyle. So more staff on the ground, almost double the standard in the industry. A very rich, diverse event calendar that is carefully curated every month to kind of like address the needs of the community that is in the space. And we really have a best-in-class industry service. So at the bottom line is 93% of our members say that like being at Mindspace benefits their business. 94-95% of our members, this is kind of like third-party conducted service that we do every 6 months. 94-95% of the members say that they recommend Mindspace to a friend. So employees are very satisfied. The churn is very low. We have a lot of demand from enterprises that keeps growing. And combining all of these aspects together basically is a differentiator. Until you experience the space and spend some time in it for a while and then experience the different operations, it will all be words, but the occupancy and the satisfaction eventually reflects everything that we do.
With WeWork's growth at all cost business model, I asked Itai about Mindspace's business model and approach to growth.
Their focal points, I think, are somewhat different now because preparation for IPO, as rumored, and now with the bond and everything, and I guess they also need to move the needle in every new transaction. It's hard to be very very picky when you say I need transactions not less than a certain size that don't always exist in certain cities. So I can't really speak on their behalf and what they're doing and their discount approach, but I can tell you that we didn't experience the need, and we compete with them in almost any cities that we're in, or we were first in many cities and then they joined, and we didn't feel the need to compete on price. And we are still maintaining very, very high occupancies, probably the highest occupancies in the industry. Or almost all of our stabilized locations are constantly between 95 to 99% occupied. And many times when somebody do leave, the absorption is from within. One of the existing clients is taking the space because they want to grow and they enjoy their experience. But again, it goes back to the approach of, if we understand that good real estate, well-located real estate, outperforms through the cycles, and we want to leverage on that, even if per pound this real estate is more expensive, and we say we're not compromising on the locations, we'll not seek the cheapest possible transaction in the market. We'll try to be smart about it, but we're not compromising on the location. And then we're not compromising on the level of service, And the space is indeed unique, and it's not a cookie cutter, and the relationships and the benefits to the members are indeed unique. Then we see that we don't need to compete on price, and we don't need to compare, and we don't need to fight for our members. They are being lured by various competitors all the time, and they come to us and they tell us about it, but they're staying. The vast majority of them are staying for a long term period. So far I can tell you that what WeWork is doing is actually benefiting our industry and us, because 2 years ago I needed to convince landlords that this type of occupancy in their building will actually benefit the building and activate the building. The immediate reaction, especially in Europe, was, "You want to come into my building and say and sell space? Are you crazy?" So, and we tried to tell them, no, you don't understand. It's a different type of a business model. It will actually benefit the entire experience in the building. Other tenants will see us as an amenity. They will be able to maybe use our meeting rooms when they have a board meeting and come to events and maybe enjoy the yoga classes and so on. So it took some time, and I think a lot thanks to WeWork with their marketing budget and so on. There is much more awareness by both tenants and landlords to this type of product. And now landlords are calling us from all over the world and saying, "Hey, like, we want this type of use in our building. Would you consider our building?" And a lot of tenants and enterprises are saying, "We don't think that we need to sign long-term leases anymore in various cities, and we can utilize this new trend in the industry." So it creates a lot of demand and a lot of awareness from landlords. So it actually helps us, because by providing a seamless product, a high-end product with a very good service, eventually we're winning a lot of customers and they're staying for a long time. And we were able to keep growing in other cities.
Mindspace's focus has been in Europe and the Middle East. I asked Itai if the plan is to continue to grow its brand in those markets, or if it plans to expand outside of Europe.
So we are now one of the largest players in Europe, and we're present in 13 cities and 7 different countries. And doing that was the hard part. Starting operations with all of the accounting and tax implications and structure implications and culture implications and language implications. Starting operations in 7 different countries was kind of like the hard task. Now that we know in different countries how to do customer acquisitions and the cultural preferences, and we have all of the legal and structural in place, and the junior management and even more senior management in some of these countries, we're definitely going to leverage on that and kind of like and strengthen our presence in these countries, in Germany and in the UK and in Poland and in Israel, and we now entered the Netherlands with an acquisition of a different co-working company. And also we entered Bucharest with a partnership with a large landlord, the largest landlord in Romania and Poland. We also just opened our first location in the US in DC, and we're about to open in a couple of weeks our first location in San Francisco. And we are aiming to continue and grow in the US. We see tremendous amount of demand in the US, and what you'd consider as a tier 2 city in the US might be a tier 1 city in Europe. So there's like, we see a lot of opportunity to grow in the US and very attractive opportunities that we're looking at. So I would say that it will probably be 50-50 or 60-40. Keep growing in the existing markets, leveraging our experience and capabilities in the existing markets, and also continue screen additional cities. And there are several cities that are now on our radar after we conducted a lot of research on the ground research. And we're about to start active negotiations, and are in active negotiations in some other cities in Europe and in the US. We take growth very responsibly. It's a very responsible approach towards growth. So we are a rapidly growing company and grew from 15 employees 2 years ago to about 160, 170 employees today, and to almost 1 million square feet. But still, there were so many opportunities in the last few years that came from different areas around the globe that we said, you know what, we have to be responsible about it, and take a very kind of like mature approach towards growth in order to make sure that we keep executing, we keep performing, we keep having those high occupancies, we keep having these very high satisfaction from our members, from the enterprises, because if we'll fail once because we grew too fast, we might hurt like the entire brand and the entire positioning of the company, and we're not willing to do so.
Co-working spaces are built with flexibility in mind from the start. The co-working industry was born out of the need for today's workforce to choose how and where they want to work, and perhaps more importantly, when they want to work. I asked Itai if there is an untapped opportunity for co-working on the horizon.
I might be biased, but I think yes. I think absolutely. I think our industry is following at probably a faster pace the trend that happened in the hospitality industry. So if you look a couple of decades back, most hotel owners were also the operators of the hotels. And what happened is that there was a shift that took some time, but there is a shift for OpCo, PropCo type of operations. And today, most hotel owners, especially in the US, it's a little bit less the situation in Europe, but most hotel owners in the US are real estate companies, and they're asset-centric companies. And they engage operators, and now even the flag, the franchise, was also separated from the operation. So you see that most hotel companies, if you look at like Marriott and Hyatt and Hilton and so on, they are asset-light companies. They are not leasing their space anymore, and they're being engaged either to operate the building, the hotel operations, and to bring their brand and franchise. I think it will take time until we see separation from the franchise in our industry, but I do feel that if co-working is comprising today of 1%, 2% of total office supply in global gateway cities, and if you look at the workforce from the other hand, you see a major shift in the workforce with millennials and their preferences towards employment and the growth of small enterprises, of companies less than 10 employees and independent professionals and so on. When you look at the workforce, you see that 40, 50% of the workforce is comprised of small companies. And now we see enterprises also seeking for this type of real estate solution. So we can safely argue that 50, 60% of the workforce, what they need is not traditional real estate leases, long-term leases. It doesn't serve their needs. On the other hand, only 1% or 2% of the office supply is serving their needs. So this is part of the reason why many operators are experiencing very high occupancies today. Nevertheless, like despite the fact that they are not giving very good service, what I think we will see is that 20, 30% of the office supply in the city will be a flex office space in various models. Like you will have high-end experience, low-end experience, you will have various solutions and structures, but I think we'll see a much more significant portion of the supply of office space being flexible. And I think landlords, and we see it today, will say, I want to enjoy part of the upside of what this type of operation is generating, because we are generating significantly more per square foot than what the landlord is generating, which is a shame. The landlord was the one who built or bought the property and spent a lot of money on, and kind of like is still, like landlords are still stuck with limited upside because of they're doing traditional long-term leases with operators like us. So we are now in the midst of having discussions with some very large global landlords about developing a different type of business model, a business model that collaborates with the landlords, that is activating the entire building and not only the flex office space portion in the building, so making all of the tenants in the building happy, regardless if they are tenants of the flex office program or tenants of the landlord in long-term leases, and letting the landlords enjoy the upside that this type of operations can generate. So I think we're really kind of like observing historic, exciting times in that of a real shift or a real change in the sector, in a specific sector of real estate, that in a few years will look very standard and obvious to everybody. What is also interesting is that real estate is probably one of the last sectors to start engaging with technology and innovation. Even shipping as an industry is today entertaining more technology and innovation than real estate. And in the last year or two, we started seeing more and more real estate tech companies evolving in many sectors of real estate, and it's really exciting. And we'll see more kind of like new age digital experience, data based experience in many buildings and in many flex office operations that will help out like outperform the entire operations and the building operation as a whole. So absolutely fascinating time to be alive and watching all of this if you're a real estate geek, which I guess I am.
Great to connect with Itai Banayan of Mindspace today. Shared workspaces have grown at an incredible rate of 200% over the past 5 years. In global cities like London, New York, and Chicago, they're expanding at an annual rate of 20%, making co-working an institutional part of the market. In August, Mindspace opened its first United States space in the center of bustling K Street in Washington, D.C. The space spans 31,000 square feet at Heinz 1 Franklin Square Building, home to the Washington Post, and accommodates over 500 members. Be on the lookout for the next Mindspace opening in a city near you. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Want daily interviews with real estate investors and none of the fluff? Go to bestevershow.com, where Joe Fairless interviews daily real estate investors and entrepreneurs about their best advice ever. Go to bestevershow.com.
And that concludes our show. I'm excited to follow Itai and Mindspace's growth in the United States and beyond. You can find out more about Itai and Mindspace in the show notes. Please subscribe to The Real Estate Innovators and leave a review wherever you subscribe to podcasts, which helps us grow our audience. You can find out more about me and Founders Grove Capital at foundersgrovecapital.com. Until next time, innovators.